plea deal for lying on his tax returns. He also agreed a deal over charges of lying on a gun permit application. He said he did not use drugs when he has admitted to addiction. During a recent hearing of the committee, firebrand Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene raised eyebrows when she shared explicit images of Hunter Biden with notorious women taken from his laptop. The Georgia Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene warned parents watching at home before her time questioning IRS whistleblowers that discretion is advised. The shocking moment went out on the C-SPAN live stream as well as other cable network channels airing the hearing, including Fox News Channel.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. In today's program, we'll be discussing the interesting practices followed subcontinent during the holy month of Muharram.
In this special episode of The Subcontinent, we'll discuss the rich culture of the continent showcased through mourning rituals during Muharram. And we shall also take a look at interfaith unity observed in the subcontinent during the Islamic month of mourning.
Muharram holds immense spiritual significance for the Muslims of the Indian subcontinent. It marks the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the beloved grandson of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon them, at Karbala. As the crescent moon ushers in this sacred month, the preparation for the age Muharram rituals begins throughout South Asia. From the solemn mourning ceremonies to the distribution of food, these traditions, steeped deep in history, present rich cultural heritage of the subcontinent.
Muharram rituals across the subcontinent diverse, reflecting a rich tapestry of devotion. Majalis or religious gatherings as an important part of these rituals are regularly held in mosques and imambaras where scholars recount the events of Karbala. The portraiture of the desert sieged by Yazid army, the water supply cut off in the hottest weather gives a peep into the brutal treatment that was given to the family of the Prophet, peace be upon him. These gatherings also serve as a platform for disseminating profound lessons to stand for truth and justice. An important tradition that can be seen across the subcontinent is the Taziya procession. Beautifully crafted replicas of Imam Hussein's tomb, known as Taziyas, are carried through the streets in a symbolic funeral procession. Taziyas exist in the Indian subcontinent as an expression of devotion and love, also reflecting the rich Indian art. The Muharram processions in South Asia are grand spectacles accompanied by recitation of the pathetic story of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. These poetic recitations, also known as Noha or Marsiya, form an important part of the mourning rituals. The rhyme and rhythm, intensified by the figurative language in local colors, and the disciplined beat of the mourners recreate the scenes of Karbala and the massacre of the holy family of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, immortalizing their unmatched martyrdom.
Talking about the interfaith unity in India during the month of Muharram, there is an unusual community of mourners who carry their own procession of Taziya and beat their chests like Shia Muslims. The interesting fact is that they are Hindus known as Husseini Brahmins. also called as Mohyals, this community of Hindus from North India believes that its ancestors fought on Imam Hussein's side at Karbala and many of them died in the battle. Continuing the legacy, this community cherishes its mythic lineage to Imam Hussein and reveres the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon them.
For centuries, the subcontinent has been a melting of heterogeneous traditional beliefs. The pluralistic worldview can also be observed during the Islamic holy month of Muharram. From participating in the religious gatherings to the distribution of food, people from varied religious backgrounds participate in various rituals surrounding Muharram. The observance of these ceremonies has become harbinger for interfaith harmony in the subcontinent, especially India. Prominent participation of Hindus in the Muharram mourning has been a part of the Indian culture since centuries. Being the center of mourning or Azadari in India, Lucknow has several imambaras which have reportedly been constructed by Hindu noblemen. These imambaras are famous for their non-Muslim mourners who observe Muharram with devotion and religiosity. Individuals from different faiths considered that Imam Hussein's stand against injustice was a great service to humanity, providing people the moral support to stand against oppression. At various places in the Indian mainland, Hindu families have been taking out Tazia processions for hundreds of years, believing that Imam Hussein, as an embodiment of piety, courage, and sacrifice, belongs to the whole mankind. Every year on Ashura, these Hindus march chanting Ya Hussein, regularly beating their chests while carrying the replicas of Imam Hussein's tomb.
Welcome back, everyone. Now to talk more on this special occasion, we are joined by Director of Swami Vivekananda Cultural Center, Professor Balram Shukla from Tehran. Welcome to the program, sir.
Thanks a lot.
Now, Professor, let's begin by this. When we hear the word Muharram or Imam Hussein, what is the first thing or things that comes to your mind?
By hearing the word Imam Hussein, the thing which comes in my mind is that he is the epitome of struggle against tyranny, against untruthfulness.
Now, sir, the Indian subcontinent is known for its rich cultural diversity with people from different religions, cultures, and many, many languages all living together. Now, in India, a country of 1.4 billion people, how does this diversity manifest itself in the month of Muharram?
You're right while saying that India is a syncretism of all cultures which you can find on the surface of Earth. And the variety of culture, it only does not suffice. The cultures live together and maintain peace. That is very important in India. And in this colorful India, one of the brightest colors, I think, is that of Muharram and that of Imam Hussein. So in all parts of India, we find that Muharram is observed, mourning is observed, and people find themselves in vicinity of the Imam alayhi salam, and many localized things with Imam is also seen, which is not visible even in Iran, even in other parts of the world.
We will talk about that later on. Now, we've seen that Hindus and Sikhs, like you said, extending help to Muslims in the month of Muharram in organizing mourning ceremonies as well, or in other ways. And many of them show tremendous respect to these annual commemorations, you said. Now, as a Hindu yourself, how do you see the event of Karbala and its message for humanity?
Karbala was an event which could transcend the locality, the geography, the ethnicity, even the religion, even the Islam, because it is not only the thing which Muslims only can claim. All the human beings of every, each and every ethnicity find themselves in proximity of Imam, because of the specific message the Karbala has got. Karbala has given the message that even if you seem to be small, even if you seem to be weak, you should not give up the side of truth. And ultimately, you will triumph. You will win. Even when your enemy, which is untruthful, seems to be invincible, he is not invincible because it is not on the side of truth. So being truthfulness and struggling for the case of truth is the message which has influenced all the humanity in spite of the difference of ethnicity, religion and borders.
That's right, sir. Now, Professor, in India as well as South Asian countries, massive Muharram processions are taken out every year. Now, can you tell us something about your city in India and how these commemorations are held? And also, have you ever, I'm sure you have, participated in them?
Yeah, see, there are many causes why Muharram is so popular in India. The first thing that it is a general holiday in India. Muslims are not in such large number as Hindus. Shias are very less than among all the Muslims. Still there, we have general holiday and everyone has wants to know what the Muharram is. So I belong to the state of Uttar Pradesh, the Gorakhpur, and there is a Imam Bada. The Imam Badas are the specific places where that is not masjid, that is not temple. That is a specific place where mourning of Imam Hussein is being observed. So there is a great, huge Imam Bada in Gorakhpur. The people of all religion go there and mourn for Imam, observe the mournings and tiyas and zaris of Imam. So, but I belong to a village which is 40 kilometers far from the city. And even in our villages, though there are not very populous with Muslims, I don't think that there is a single Shia in my village. Yeah. Still, Muharram is being celebrated there. And weeks before the Muharram, weeks before the Ashura, they start mourning and telling the stories and with all the things, the taziyas, the alams, all these things are observed there. And in our childhood, we also used to be there as in a procession. Even we didn't know who this Imam was. Yeah. We didn't know that he belonged to Arab country. Yeah. We thought that he was in from our village only. Yeah. So it is from vicinity, in our vicinity. So emotional proximity has always been there with Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
That's right. So interesting. Now, Professor, I want to talk about Mahatma Gandhi. Mahatma Gandhi's movement was in a way similar to Imam Hussein's. So, and his brave, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, his brave stand against Yazid. I want to talk about a bit more about Mahatma Gandhi's movement.
See, Mahatma Gandhi is a beautiful syncretism of the good sayings of all the great people of all over the world. He was very much influenced with Prophet Muhammad and his grandsons. And the very important thing is that the movement of Mahatma Gandhi and movement of Hazrat Hussein, they are very much similar because the tyrant, which were Britishers, they seemed to be invincible those days. No one thought that this armless man can can do something bad to this British army. But Mahatma Gandhi believed in truth, and he stood in the side of truth, and he could do which all of the armies could not do. So just like Imam Hussein, who with his few of his followers could do something that even now we just send derogatory remarks towards his enemies, and we felicitate Imam Hussein.
Exactly, sir. A lesson related even centuries afterwards. Now, a lot has been written about Karbala and Imam Hussein's sacrifice for the sake of truth, as you said, for the sake of justice, and for the sake of humanity as well. Now, what does Hindi literature say about Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, Ara, Tasua, the month of Muharram, and any books or poetry written by Hindu writers and poets on it? And I want you to talk about your book as well, if you can.
Many Hindu poets have composed poetry and nohas and marsiyas regarding Imam. And there was a great scholar whose name was Dr. Dharmendranath. He has collected the whole plethora of writings of Hindus about Imam, and it is a voluminous book. The book is Qazadariye Imam Hussain Alayhi Salam, Ek Afaqi Tahreer, how this movement is universal. It does not only belong to Muslims or Shias or different sects of Shias, but all the sects of India also. So he himself have written very good marsiyas and ghazals regarding Imam. And you must be knowing about Premchand. Premchand is called the emperor of novels and stories in Hindi and Urdu, even Urdu language. He wrote a very renowned drama about Karbala, whose name itself is Karbala. It has been translated into several languages also. I myself have, on my personal choice, I have composed several verses. I have translated in versified form the all Dawazdah Banda Muhtasham Kashani, which is very famous in Iran. In every nook and corner, I see the verses of Muhtasham Kashani's Dawazdah Band is there in Tarkib Band is there in Tehran. And in my collection of ghazals, I also have.
You've told me that you've been here for about 6 months now. So how does it feel to be in the Islamic Republic of Iran? What are the cultural commonalities between the two countries that you find fascinating?
For an Indian, being in Iran is also is always a dream coming true, because we share our history, we had shared our borders, we share our ethnicity, we are Aryan peoples, we are from eastern part of the world. And as I personally like Persian language and literature a lot, and both Persian language and literature is in abundance in Iran, therefore I am very happy to be here. I can meet the people which I always cherished, envisaged to meet, and learn a lot from them. I can hear the sweetest Persian language, which I always had loved, and the love and respect of Persian people in the eyes of Persian people, Iranian people, which they know that we are from India. When we see their eyes, it is very much wonderful, very wonderful and astonishing that how they love us. And I think that in my stay here, I can reassure and cherish that this consciousness which we have always shared from millennia.
That's right, sir. Iranian people have always been hospitable towards foreigners. Doesn't matter if they're Hindu, they're not Muslims, or any other race or religion. Mm-hmm. So it's usually like this. Thank you, sir, Professor. Anything you want to add for the final?
Very much thankful to all of your team that I have been invited here.
Thank you, Professor, for being on the program. There you have it. Professor Balram Shukla from Tehran, originally from India. He's the director at Swami Vivekananda Cultural Center of India. Thank you for being on the program.
Thanks a lot.
And now let's go to social media and see what people around the world have to say about the month of Muharram and also Imam Hussein, peace be upon him.
Kulwant Singh, a Marxist and a PhD in Masonic studies, tweeted, Sikhs taking part in Muharram, an observation in Tamil Nadu notes that during the month of Muharram, a time for mourning for Muslims, martyrs as smeared Nana Panthiks, most probably Udasi Sikhs, would take part in the procession to mourn. Shamsur Rahman Alavi, a journalist who has worked with prominent Indian media houses, tweeted, Kasturi Bai hasn't applied oil to her hair and will not for the period of 10 days. No one is eating paan in the house and they move barefoot respectfully as the tazia is being given final shape in their house. CEEO India, a think tank that believes to connect people across India, tweeted, Ya Hussein, Sabil across the country in collaboration with different anjumans are being part of culture of unity and a gift by Imam Hussein to mankind. Let this Muharram we learn from the University of Karbala. Hussein for all. Zaid Ahmed, a netizen, tweeted, In subcontinent, Hindus, Muslims and Sikhs share common values and do participate in religious, social gatherings and events. Basant, Baisakhi, Holi and even during Muharram Milad processions. Hindus, Sikhs placed fresh water and milk points for the participants.
And that was our special episode on the observance of Muharram in the subcontinent. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take great care.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
In Britain, new research has shown that many people are currently facing worsening and in some cases catastrophic health impacts due to ongoing delays in healthcare. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. A damning report warned thousands of patients in England are experiencing catastrophic health impact as a result of vital NHS appointments, procedures or operations being delayed or cancelled. A record 7.5 million people are waiting to start routine hospital treatment, the highest figure since records began back in 2007. About 385,000 people have now been waiting more than a year to start their NHS treatment. A devastating report by Health Watch England, a watchdog, says the last-minute cancellations were causing patients to get even sicker and their mental health to deteriorate. It found some in severe pain have endured multiple cancellations and postponements. In 2022-2023, there were 77,266 last-minute cancelled operations for people waiting for pre-planned care in hospitals in England. Meanwhile, separate figures show that strikes over the past 8 months have led to 819,000 appointments, operations and procedures being postponed. The report published on Thursday, 27th of July, came a day after junior doctors in England announced a fresh round of strikes in August, which could lead to tens of thousands of more treatments being either delayed or cancelled. The British Medical Association, the BMA, said junior doctors in England would stage a 4-day strike amid the continuing row with the government over pay. Thousands of new doctors will be urged to strike just over a week after starting work in England's hospitals. The strike will begin at 7 a.m. local time on 11th of August. A survey for the Health Watch report found that more than a third, or 39% of people who had an appointment called off this year experienced cancellations or postponements 2 or more times. Approximately 1,084 adults in England who had an appointment cancelled in 2023 were polled by Yonder Data Solutions on behalf of Health Watch. They included people who faced postponements for pre-planned hospital care, hospital outpatient appointments, diagnosis scans or tests, and community health appointments. Nearly 1 in 5 or 18% said their appointments were cancelled at the last minute, either on the day or as they arrive for their appointment. About 66% said cancellations to care had an impact, reporting continuing pain, worsening symptoms, worsening mental health, and disrupted sleep, among other problems. Half, or 52%, said they had not been offered support to manage their medical condition during the new wait for care, and 79% said the National Health Service had offered them very little or no support with their mental health. Health Watch said some groups appear to be disproportionately affected by the cancellations. They include unpaid carers, neurodivergent people, those on lower incomes, and people from minority ethnic backgrounds. Louise Ansari, the chief executive of Health Watch England, said the findings of our research show that many people are currently facing worsening and, in some cases, catastrophic health impacts due to ongoing delays to care. Louise Ansari continued, and addressing health inequalities continues to be a significant challenge for the National Health Service. She added, people who often face serious difficulties accessing specialist NHS care, such as unpaid carers, neurodivergent people and those on lower incomes, are also those who are suffering the most from ongoing cancellations. She added, if their symptoms worsen or their mental health deteriorates, this in turn puts extra pressure on health and care services. We urgently need to reduce the number of cancellations of appointments, especially last-minute cancellations, and greater action is needed to address widening health inequalities. She added, with industrial action in the National Health Service being one of the many factors impacting people's ability to access timely healthcare, We're also renewing our call for all parties to reach a resolution to mitigate the impact of strikes on patients. An NHS England spokesperson said strikes over the past 8 months had obviously had a significant impact, but claimed that staff were doing all they could to manage the disruption. National broadcaster ITV has also covered the same story. Radiographers at 37 National Health Service trusts in England are going on strike as the pay row with the government continues. Members of the Society of Radiographers have voted to reject the government's 5% pay award and called for talks to reopen after other public sector workers, including junior doctors, were offered more. The union said worrying numbers of staff are leaving the profession and not enough is being done to recruit more workers. The 48-hour strike will run from 8 a.m. local time on Tuesday, 1st of August, and will involve the 35 NHS trusts where members have a mandate to strike. These include the Royal Marsden Cancer Hospital in London, University College London Hospitals, Liverpool University Hospitals, Nottingham University Hospitals, University Hospitals, Bristol and Western, and Sheffield's Teaching Hospitals. The Society of Radiographers said 9 out of 10 NHS patients are supported by radiographers who carry out X-rays, magnetic resonance imaging and CT scans, ultrasounds and breast screening, as well as radiotherapy for cancer patients. 1 million people are waiting for radiography. Dean Rogers, Executive Director of Industrial Strategy and Member Relations for the Society of Radiographers, said, "Voting for strike action was a difficult decision for our members, who care above all about the safety and well-being of their patients." Dean Rogers added, "We need to draw attention to the fact that many radiography professionals are feeling burnt out by low pay and increased working hours. They're leaving the National Health Service and they're not being replaced in adequate numbers." Dean Rogers added, "If the government wants to reduce NHS waiting lists and ensure that patients receive the treatment that they need when they need it, then it must urgently prioritise the recruitment and retention of radiography professionals. And that means talking to us about our pay and conditions." He said, "But they're refusing to talk to us even though our door is open. Our members deserve better. Our patients deserve better." Health and Social Care Secretary Steve Barclay said, "I want to see an end to disruptive strikes so the National Health Service can focus relentlessly on cutting waiting lists and delivering for patients." Dr. Wynne Diwakar, the National Health Service Medical Director for Secondary Care, said, "Figures show that impact of industrial action is having on patients and families, and the scale of disruption is likely to be even greater, with many services avoiding scheduling appointments for the strike days." Dr. Vin Diwakar said, "We have now seen 765,000 appointments needing to be rescheduled in the last 8 months because of strikes, and we are continuing to see a significant cumulative impact on National Health Service services, as well as our hard-working staff, as they do all they can to maintain safe patient services while tackling a record backlog."
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pit.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam, my dear. Allah, my Lord. He's what Quran.
الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. And this is your station again.
Yes, home sweet home.
Yeah. I am Bita.
I guess there's a Mary, you know, you should... Yes, we have the pleasure to be here at your service. Youth Station, you here. What could be even more beautiful?
Exactly. This is really beautiful, the combination of you and me. And I'm really grateful for that. I think sometimes there are, I don't know, some accidents in our lives that will make us feel like, okay, I'm taking everything for granted.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm looking really easy in everything. My family, my, I don't know, success, my everything I have.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens a lot, I think. I don't know whether you go through this or not. But
unfortunately, I have to say yes.
And
big
sometimes
yes.
Those stories not only taking things for granted, mm-hmm. you just are nagging always about everything in your life.
Yeah,
you know?
Unfortunately.
And it is sad. Because I have some friends of mine who, you know, they don't have easy lives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their parents get divorced. They were alone on themselves when they were young. They were living in the battlefield, you know,
exactly.
the fight of their parents
yeah.
and so on. And yesterday I was talking to one of these friends and she told me that, you know what, if I had a parent, I would spend more time on my studying. And it really touches me, you know.
Of
that,
course.
Come on.
Yes.
I have all these facilities. Mm-hmm. I all have these prosperities.
You know, all these moments happen to all of us.
It's really dark.
We see other people, like the people who are paralyzed, who cannot move.
Exactly.
You see them, how hardworking, how sometimes even some of them are so creative.
Yeah.
How creative and active they are. And yet
and
me,
not.
Being so healthy, being so, you know, being so wealthy as I have the health, of course, I ignore all of these blessings
and
I just
useless,
think
really.
About the empty part of the glass.
Exactly. And I think we as human beings just tend to embrace the wounds and the sadness of our life more than this happiness.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why.
Well, because, you know, there was something very nice that I was listening to. It was a documentary or something like that. A great man. He was actually so famous. I just don't remember the details. I just know the general idea. Because it actually got into my heart, the words he mentioned.
Yeah.
The person, the host, asked him, why do we usually feel more prone to sadness than to happiness?
Why?
Then he said, because among all human feelings, sadness is the one that prolongs more and more in our thoughts and is the thing that our mind and our heart is more eager to stand to. To hold on to.
It is.
You know, when you're happy, those moments of happiness, if you just think about it, those moments of happiness are very temporary.
They are.
They are not going to last more than, if you're so much of an optimist person, it's not going to last more than a week.
And you're going to forget it easily.
You're going to forget it just, as for me, I forget it in a blink of an eye.
Me too.
It's going to be forgotten as soon as, you know, a minute is passed over it.
Yeah.
But then sadness is going to remain more because, first of all, human soul gets the meaning out of sadness, gets the meaning of everything out of sadness. I was reading some quotes from someone who said that if you do not go through too much of problems and dramas, you're not going to be a writer.
Yeah.
Those who are poets have gone through too much of sadness.
Everybody goes through sadness more than happiness. And again, this sadness of having forcing me to go for a short break is coming up here.
Exactly.
So stay tuned.
Sadness always comes in the middle.
Changing the sad vibe here again at your station. I am Bita.
And I'm Asma at your service.
And then we were talking about this concept of sadness and happiness and why we tend to catch these sadness.
And being grateful,
more.
Of course.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that one of the ways that we can have a kind of balanced approach to life is being grateful.
Which is, by the way, very difficult. Even if you think you are much of a believer, then I'm pretty sure that if you go in between the lines of your life, you could see that you have not been as grateful as the blessings you
have
got in your life.
You know what? I think the difficulty of being grateful is that you have to focus on the things you have.
Exactly.
Not the things you don't. And this is the most difficult part for every human being, to focus on everything they have. You know, just not about thinking about the regrets, the error, on everything they don't have. You know?
Let me, as a person, as a member of pessimist society, tell you something.
I'm all here.
To stand for my society and justify them for not being grateful.
I'm part of your society, too.
So as two members of that society, let's justify why we are not so grateful. I could say, Bita, I don't know if you feel the same.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes, yes, I do count the blessings in my life. Like, I have a family, I have a great, great, very much of a great parent.
Health.
And then health, and then many things, you know? A shelter, we have a home, we have a room, I have a bedroom, you know, all these details.
Yeah, I know.
I know that I have all of them. But just, you know, when I look at tiny little details that are changed in my life, like, for example, when I see my parents getting old, like when I see the gray hair on their face and on my mother's head, I just start thinking, okay, even the blessings that I have are not going to remain forever.
Yeah, they won't.
This concept makes me feel so much prone to being pessimist than to be optimist.
This is not a good excuse to make, dear. You know, because everything in this world is like that. Nothing's going to last forever.
Yeah, I know. You know, I'm usually the one who says that a lot. Yeah. I usually say that leave the moment. Just live in the moment. As in, for example, I have a parent right now. Yeah. I have to make the most out of my time with them. I have my brothers right now with me. I have to enjoy each and every moment we spend together.
Yeah.
And I should not think about the day after today. You know what I mean?
In order not to shoot and think, you have to think about them. You have to have that part in your mind that lost is a part of having something.
But if I think about it, then life would get so intolerable.
No, it's not like about thinking, it's about overthinking. You are an overthinker, you know? It's like when you are having something, the only thing that comes to your mind is losing that.
Yes.
No, this is not the point. You have to always have this mind. When you have something, one of the consequences of having something is losing it, you know?
Yeah, and
that's
this is sad.
This is not an excuse.
And
just to tell me that I'm not grateful because I'm going to lose it.
No, it's not that I'm not grateful.
No,
I told
it's
you.
That you feel grateful, but you don't show it because you're sad with your lost things.
Because I'm
you're
sad
justifying
for
yourself.
The day.
No.
Because I'm sad for the day that I'm going to lose all these things.
Has it happened yet? No.
Yeah.
So why should
but
you feel
I
like
cannot
sad?
Help not thinking about it.
Yeah, I know, you're a pessimist overthinker, which is a big disaster.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
For example, you know, I have gone through my exam and the entrance exam is passed. And I know this year I'm going to be a student. But yet, I know that it's going to be finished after 2 years.
This is life. You know,
I'm talking about one of the most dangerous diseases in the world.
Yeah,
and I guess many people are getting into that disease.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people.
You know, we all think about this aspect of having something or achieving something that is not going to last forever.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that it has to affect us as if we feel like sad. No.
Yeah.
Just be happy. Exactly. Whatever you have.
I say these things to myself a lot. You know, there was this dialogue in a beautiful animation.
Yeah.
The girl was just, I don't know if you've watched it or not.
Not sure.
What is Tangled. Me? You know, the animation called Tangled, the girl with this long hair.
Yeah, I watched it.
As she had a dream in her life to watch the lanterns from outside the castle.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then when she got to see them, she was so sad. That moment of sadness, the boy asked her, "Why are you so sad?" She said, "I'm sad for what I will do after this moment is done. This was my dream. After getting this dream, how am I going to continue my life?"
You know, this is, I think, about our perfectionism. You know, there is a perfection we just want to achieve, but it's not achievable in this world.
Yeah.
Because all the things that, most of the things that we have around ourselves is materialistic, you know. Even our parents, even these attachments are a bit of materialistic, you know. We cannot just deny that. We need something stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not going to happen here. And well, that's why we have afterlife.
Let me just tell you something. The answer of that boy was also important. He told her, "Okay, it's not a problem. You're going to build a new dream. You're going to create a new dream for yourself." This is very true. Though in the sadness of your life, you cannot say that if something is gone, I can replace it with a new thing. I don't believe in this word and this claim because it's not truth. Things are not replaceable in life. The thing is that you're going to find a new thing
to replace it.
You know, nice to just things. Get used to it again.
I know.
To get accustomed. To make you forget about things. A distractor, let me just call it. But at the very same time, I try to work on myself very hard. When these thoughts get into my mind, the first thing that sparkles in my mind is the fact that, okay, Asma, try to have this in your mind, that you are living in a moment. Don't think about tomorrow. Don't think about the next week. Don't think about the next month.
But
you're living in today, and maybe there is no tomorrow. So just enjoy today.
These methods are not going to work on me. So one of the most influential ways that I use in my own life just to stop this thing of sadness of losing things and feeling like I'm miserable is talking to the most miserable people I know in my life. And talking to them is always kind of, I don't know, a revolution in my heart.
I guess people's strategies and tactics to heal themselves are very, very different from each other. The strategy that you're saying, if I prescribe it for myself, then that would be the last straw.
Yeah, I get
But
only for some, I don't know, 5 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
And after that, it's going to work for me. And I feel like I have to be grateful for whatever I am. And I have to work more, do more.
No, honestly, for myself, the best way to count them is to go for these inspirational documentaries for some words. And of course, reciting the Holy Book of Quran.
Yeah, for sure.
It helps me too much. When I just sit in the yard or in the, I don't know, somewhere in a cozy place where there's a sky and then thinking about Allah, talking to Him, telling Him, pouring out my soul for Him, it would just work like wonders for me.
And it is really amazing that as two different individuals, we have two completely different ways
of course.
Be grateful for everything. And I think it's true for our dear listeners
too. So it's difficult. Let's say just the gist. Being grateful is difficult and it is not.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult because with all the problems that you see around yourself, be it for yourself or for the others, it is not very easy to just count all the time, to sit and count all the blessings.
Yeah.
But at the very same time, the breath that comes and goes, the eyes that sees all the beauties that has been created
all
by Allah.
All the things we take for granted.
All the beautiful things still are there. You can count on them. Live in the moment. Do not be an overthinking person like me. Well, the things that I'm telling to you, I actually practice myself because I hate to say things that I did not practice.
I know you.
So I guess they would work.
So I guess we have to be grateful for the time we had.
Yeah.
In these
and
13,
thank you, Allah,
minutes.
For giving us another episode,
exactly.
Another chance to be here.
And again, I'm even grateful for having the end of the episode because we're going to go through another one
for you.
So have a check on our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam. So thank you, dear listeners, for listening to us. It was all the time we had, and I bid you farewell. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
BRICS Security Cooperation emphasizes multilateral security and common security, which is greatly different from what the United States advocates. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Global Times noted, the increasing importance of the BRICS amid rapidly changing geopolitics is being reflected in the grouping's role in global security. BRICS national security advisors are meeting in the host country of South Africa as part of the build-up to the highly anticipated summit of the bloc next month. Political and security cooperation is one of the original objectives of BRICS cooperation, and it is also one of the pillars of the current BRICS agenda. The meeting of national security advisors and high representatives on national security serves as the main platform for the BRICS countries to discuss and carry out cooperation in the field of politics and security. The current global security governance is undergoing systematic shocks, with turbulent factors in the international situation increasing. The U.S. is creating an atmosphere of confrontation and tension worldwide, utilizing the so-called Indo-Pacific strategy and NATO to simultaneously encircle and contain China and Russia. Its aim is to maintain the old global order and the U.S. monopolizes. To achieve this, the U.S. regime has strengthened its various security cooperation mechanisms, coercing other countries to align with its interests. Song Zhongping, a Chinese military expert and TV commentator, told the Global Times that this approach is actually using a security mechanism to hijack the interests of others. In contrast, BRICS security cooperation emphasizes multilateral security and common security, which is greatly different from what the United States advocates. Zhu Tiangxiong, director at the Center for BRICS Political and Security Studies, Institute of BRICS Studies of Sichuan International Studies University, told the Global Times that the BRICS mechanism has different ways and methods from Western-dominated mechanisms when dealing with global and regional hotspots issues. The discussion of all issues, including security issues, by the BRICS countries is based on consensus. There is no so-called dominance, and everyone is on an equal footing. The solutions to specific problems are also different from those in the West. Western countries often impose sanctions or even use military means, while other BRICS cooperation peaceful methods such as promoting diplomacy, dialogue, negotiation, and mediation are used. This has provided new ideas for regional and global security. At the meeting of BRICS national security advisors and high representatives on national security, you said the Russia-Ukraine crisis is likely to be the focus of discussion, and promoting peace and talks will certainly take center stage. Now, the security differences between Western countries and emerging countries, including developing ones, are widening, and ideological disputes on a global scale are intensifying. In order to make the BRICS cooperation mechanism more long-term and developmental, corresponding security mechanism to ensure cooperation among BRICS countries must be established. This is also crucial for economic cooperation. Meanwhile, the deepening economic cooperation can in turn promote mutual trust among member states in their security cooperation. In the field of traditional security, some countries in the West have suppressed emerging and developing countries in various ways. At the same time, in the process of economic cooperation, developing countries also face constraints in non-traditional security, such as terrorism, extreme nationalism, and separatist forces. All of these hinder economic development. This is why the BRICS should strengthen cooperation in the field of security. The Global Security Initiative, put forward by China, advocates adapting to the changing international situation with a spirit of solidarity and responding to complex and intertwined security challenges with win-win thinking. It aims to eliminate the root causes of international conflicts and improve global security governance. This coincides with the multilateralism and coming security pursued by the BRICS. Within the BRICS, although each country has its own national conditions, there is a broad consensus on jointly maintaining international security cooperation. Multilateralism is needed by emerging and developing countries. This is also the reason why more than 40 countries have expressed interest in joining the BRICS. It has a center petal force, which is to promote a multipolar world and allow emerging and developing countries to have more discourse power. Within BRICS, there is no one country that dictates and can erode the interest of other countries at will. In the early days of the BRICS, there were many voices bad-mouthing the prospect of the group, pointing out the different political systems, social systems, and ideologies of the member states. Experts say this is true. However, the way the BRICS has developed to this day and the way economic and security cooperation has steadily advanced under the mechanism show that those differences do not affect the unity and attractiveness of the BRICS and its role in the international system. This is the essence of multilateralism.
Welcome back, everyone. In the first part of the documentary, we met Heather, Josh, and Rachel. All three suffer from disability and chronic illnesses. All three are children to fathers who fought in Vietnam, and all three are victims of Agent Orange. And now they decide to embark on a journey to return to the country where their tragic story began as children of war veterans and as victims of war. Now stay with us to witness the rest of this emotional and healing journey.
My father lost his arm before he chose to have children. He lost his arm during the war. And then it took him 7 years.